Episode 3684 of the Survival Podcast. It's a Monday. That means it's just me. You get a Just Jack show today. And today we're going to talk about mushrooms. Now, I recently had a couple people on as part of a mushroom series. I had a couple on that has a small mushroom business focused mainly on the health aspects of mushrooms. And, of course, I had Olga on from Mushroom Mountain. And we talked more about the cultivation of mushrooms for improving garden soils. We're going to also have Olga coming back on fairly soon to talk about mushrooms for health as well. And I've got one of the folks over at North Spore that will feature pretty prominently today as well with some options that there are for you to cultivate mushrooms in your own home. I've got somebody coming on from them to talk about specifically the cultivation of mushrooms using the type of pools that they have, like monotubs and what they call a boom room, which is kind of a take it all the way to the edge thing known in the mushroom world as a Martha tent, named after Martha Stewart, kind of DIY, do it at home, grow your own food type of thing. And I'll let you know right up front, I will be doing a lot more with mushrooms, including videos for you. The folks over at North Spore, I reached out to them in a variety of ways, and they actually have a fairly large team. I think the guy that I'm talking to about coming on the air, I think his name is Matt. I'm not sure, but I think that's what it is. And I talked to him by email, and I talked to somebody else called Nate at North Spore through DMs on X. And I said, hey, I'm not one of these creators that's like, hey, give me free stuff, you know, in order to do a review, but I really like your boom room. Would you sell me one at cost? And the response was, I'll just send you one. So they sent me a boom room. They sent me a box of three different spawns. And some of their mushroom coffee. So it seems like a good partnership forming up. The person I'm talking to about being on the air wants to do a discount from MSB. I'm just waiting to hear back so we can get them entered. That'll give you two mushroom vendors with some different things, Mushroom Mountain and North Spore, to get product from. And that will probably be, unless somebody comes to me with something really unique in the space that neither of these companies offer, that will probably be it for partners in the mushroom space and MSB. If you guys have noticed over the years, I try not to saturate it with just taking everybody and have really good premium partners that complement each other so we do not dilute mind share with all of the vendors so they get something out of it too. All right, with that, before we get into it, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day today. Sponsor of the day number one today is Jeff Berkey Guy Gleason at USABerkeyFilters.com. Water is incredibly important to your survival. You should be drinking the best, cleanest, freshest water on a daily basis. I want you to think about something else, though. Like, you know, they have these boil water advisories sometimes, like, hey, something's messed up. You should boil your water. Usually whatever's messed up was messed up for a while before they figured it out, and you were drinking it the entire time. If you're on a well like me, you might think you're immune to this, but the reality is the only person that tests your well is you. So if you have a contaminant issue in your well, and most of us that own wells, maybe we have our water tested annually, and that means you can go a long time without knowing you have a problem. So this is something we should all be aware of and all filtering our water. And I'll just tell you this way. When you put water through a Berkey, in most instances, it just tastes better. Jeff is the guy you want to talk to about it, not some guy that started selling them at a gun show yesterday or something like that. Deal with the original Jeff, the Berkey guy, Gleason, who's supported this show now for over a decade. Next up today, Biltong USA. That's Anton's Land of Biltong for you guys. Life's too short for average. Biltong is one of the most delicious, nutritious foods on the planet because it's made with red meat, which is one of the most nutritious and delicious foods on the planet. This is the way that it's been made in South Africa for hundreds of years. Anton is from South Africa. He knows what he's doing. And you also get a discount if you're an MSB member at Biltong USA. And I want you to, when you check out Anton's stuff, I want you to realize he has some other really cool things. Seasoning, some really interesting salts. I have some black pepper he sent me that's a smoked black pepper. It is freaking amazing. So it's not just the Biltong that you'll find there. And then my favorite thing that I get from him isn't actually the Biltong, believe it or not, as much as I love it. It's the Drewors and the Calabanzi sausages. Those two sausages are just fantastic. I think I'm going to reach out to him going forward and tell him I want to do some change up in the product exchange we have. Get some Calabanzi in there. That is one of my absolute favorite things in the world. Those Calabanzis are just awesome. You should check them out. All right, with that, let's go ahead and get into the main topic of today's show. Again, we're going to be talking about mushrooms, and we're coming at this from a standpoint of self-reliance, self-sufficiency here. And there's just a really huge value to learning the process of mushroom cultivation. And there are people that literally become like amateur mycologists with this. They use agar gels and tissue samples. They keep everything laboratory level. When they're doing something, they have like overhead convection hoods and really sophisticated equipment. I don't know that I have the time in my life to get that sophisticated with it, but I've already had some really good results just playing around with not only the mushroom spawn blocks that you can buy, but doing some tissue cultivation, I guess is what you'd call it, more off. Just oyster mushrooms are really easy. And I've got some props here for you guys to get an idea about that today. This is a little jar that I showed when I was interviewing the couple that we recently mentioned that we had on about mushrooms for health. And this was made 100% roll your own. This is nothing but coffee grounds and some stems from some pink oyster mushrooms. So I picked up, when we had Olga on, I picked up some pink oyster mushroom kit from Northport, which is basically a block in a box. I mean, they're truly the same thing, honestly. And I followed the instructions, and it fruited beautifully. And I had some gorgeous pink oyster mushrooms. And I took the base of the stem, and I just chopped it up, and I put it in this jar. And then I put a couple tablespoons of clean, pasteurized coffee grounds on top of it. And once it started to colonize, each day I added about another – each day – let me put it there. It wasn't each day. It was every time it fully colonized that was in there, I had about another inch. So I didn't overwhelm the limited amount of mycelium that was there. And as it went, it just kept getting faster and faster to allow it to breathe. I took a step bit and I drilled a small hole, probably about 3/8 of an inch in one of the lids. It's just a standard ball jar for those on the audio only. And I put a little bit of breathable first aid tape over it. This is one of the things that's, from the research I've done, used heavily by mushroom cultivators, especially low-tech people like myself. And this is about 2 weeks worth of adding this material, maybe three at the most, and it's almost fully colonized. So on the outside of the jar, it looks like it is, but if you take the top off, it hasn't quite covered the surface yet. It just broke through the surface today. So my point with showing you this is this is something that you have likely already. I bet you 90% or more of TSP audience drinks coffee. So you have coffee grinds. The filters are right in here. More about how I do this in a minute. So that was something that I didn't really have to worry about, you know, because I use a AeroPress, a little tiny round filters just right in there with it, layered in with it. And but I started with nothing but coffee grinds and a mushroom. I have some other stuff that I've cultivated, like just go to the store and buy blue oyster mushrooms are the most common, and that's resulted in this colony block over here. And for again, for those on the audio, I've got a one of the small Ziploc Tupperware type containers. I guess it's probably 2 quarts in volume, and this is a mix of coffee grinds and hardwood pellets. And the hardwood pellets were simply put into a pot, and then I dumped boiling water on top of them to break them down into sawdust. And I mixed them with the coffee grinds and put the blue oyster mushroom stems cut vertically to expose the mycelium that's inside them into here, and did the same layering process. And now I actually took the tape off, and I'm going to see if it'll fruit right through those three holes. It may not, I don't know. It's just fun. I've got the process down if I actually want to guarantee fruit. I'm trying to see how little I can do. But my point with all of this is, you know, again, using material you already have. So this is one of my bags, and I'm storing coffee grinds in. just a standard Ziploc bag. And what I do is, since I use an AeroPress, I open the bag at as soon as I brew the coffee and push the AeroPress down. The AeroPress is really cool. It makes a little puck, kind of like what comes out of an espresso machine. So that coffee is absolutely sanitized, right? It's just been immersed in boiling water for about 2 minutes. It's probably pretty clean anyway because it went through a roasting process and then was sealed up. By the time it does that, it's good to go. I just take the bag, I open it up, I hold the AeroPress inside it, and you smack the AeroPress and the coffee puck comes off. And I just keep doing that until I have the bag almost full. Once it gets almost full, it gets kind of where when you do that, you can end up with coffee flying all around. So I just stop, and then I end up with these bags of coffee. When I get a few bags of coffee, I make up about an equal amount of wood pellets, and then I build out things like these, or I actually have started to use Ziploc bags to make my own spawn blocks in because they're cheap and it's easy to do, and you can either then make more or you can poke holes in them and fruit right out of the bag. It really is that easy, and you know, when you're growing mycelium in these bags, all you do is cut a small patch hole in the bag and put some of that first aid tape over it. Now, this is for oyster mushrooms, and one thing I want you guys to understand about oyster mushrooms, they're incredibly easy to do. They're incredibly fast. They're incredibly aggressive. And unless some specific contaminant that can outcompete them gets into your medium, they're going to take it all over. Now, that doesn't mean they're always going to fruit for you or always going to fruit nice for you. And I'm not saying all oyster mushrooms, oyster varieties like blue, golden, pink, Italian, pearl, phoenix, which I'll talk about more in a bit. Those types of oyster mushrooms, they are probably the easiest thing you can do. Everybody says King Strophoria, and I think if I lived in Tennessee or north to the east where it's always humid, I would agree. But down here, indoors, oyster mushrooms are just stupid easy. And you can literally start with no trips to anybody's mushroom website, get a little information on YouTube of how to do it, because I'm not really going to go into exactly how to produce mushrooms today. More why and the what of it, right, instead of the how. And but you can go to the store, you can buy some oyster mushrooms, cut them open, make spawn, and start producing oyster mushrooms. And as I go through some of the advantages today, I'll talk about some other techniques that I'm starting to play with or I've seen other people do that I think are really cool. Now, I just want to explain there is an oyster mushroom called King Oyster. We're going to talk about that today. It is kind of the holy grail of oyster mushrooms. It is delicious. It's amazing. They grow really thick stems, and the stems are better than the caps, which is one of the few mushrooms where that's the case. They require a little bit more specialized equipment to get reliable fruiting and form from, but we'll get to that today as I go through all this. But that's just kind of the why we would do this. The fact that you can take garbage, I mean, essentially garbage, for most of us in this community, we would call it compost material, right? We wouldn't call it garbage, but for most of it, it's garbage. You're talking about sawdust, straw, and coffee grinds as your primary medium, okay? And I want to kind of talk about why this is such a great thing to do from a self-reliance, self-sufficiency standpoint. First of all, it's a fast turnaround. If you're doing oysters, you take about 3 weeks to make spawn to the point where it's like this, and it will fruit anywhere between another week to 2 weeks it will take to fruit. Once you get that rolling, then it doesn't really matter how long it takes, though, because if you have new batches coming in every week, you have mushrooms coming week after week after week after week after week. And it really is one of the best things that you can do for yourself if you are in a small location, like an apartment or a very small house with a very small yard or things like that. I've been trying to help people that are in like the apartment, garden home, tiny, teeny ass backyard where they really can't do much for a long time with food production at home. And what I've come up to this point has been mostly hydroponics, because hydroponics can be done indoors, outdoors. Even if you're outdoors, you can still use supplemental lighting if you have limited light capacity because of what side of an apartment building you're on or something like that. And it is a fantastic way to go. It's very fast, high turnaround, high dollar crops is mostly what you do in hydro. Sure, you can grow peppers and tomatoes, but the best thing to do with hydroponics indoors anyway, or small scale, you know, porch hydroponics is going to be your greens, and that's a very expensive crop, but it doesn't have a lot of calories, right? It doesn't have that much nutrition. It's just an adjunct, and so you're doing something. Or herbs, which are great and incredible flavor enhancers, and everybody should do herbs. But nothing that is really a source of protein is going to work for you in an apartment. I know some people have done quail in apartments and all, but they kind of stink. They kind of make a mess, and you're going to be limited in the size of the scale that you can do. If you have at least a garage, as long as you can control temps to some degree, you can do quail in a garage in a single stack, and you can produce a lot. But again, it's an animal. It requires a lot more attention. If you don't take care of it, it dies. Mushrooms, you can kind of just put the pause button on. You can put spawn into a refrigerator for a couple, 3 weeks, no problem, and then take a break and then come back and start producing again. In fact, putting it into a refrigerator, I've learned, is one of the ways to actually stimulate fruiting, that you create kind of this frost, like warm weather frost and then warm up stage that actually can trigger fruiting in a lot of different mushrooms. And when you're resting spawn, so I've had a spawn block, it fruited, and I'm going to let it rest and try to fruit it again. A lot of times the best thing you can do is throw it in the refrigerator for a day and then bring it back out and put it in its fruiting environment, and it's more likely to fruit. When I say fruit, I'm talking about the part we eat. Fruiting bodies is what it's called in the mycological world, where the mushroom is really this, the mycelium. That is really the mushroom. We see come above the ground as the smallest component of the whole, and it is what we call the fruiting body, or the mushroom is what we call it that we eat. So by giving it that kind of rest period, we can often get something that's already fruited to fruit again for us, and that's really cool. But very fast turnaround. The other thing is, since it can be done indoors, and in some climates it's best done indoors, that means you can do it year-round. So there's no time when you can't grow mushrooms. If your environment is such that no grass mushrooms will grow, you probably can't live in it. Because like a perfect temperature to fruit the largest majority of mushrooms. Now, some like it cooler and some like it hotter. But like that perfect zone where you get the most fruiting, especially out of like oysters, is about 70 to 75 degrees Fahrenheit. Most of us keep our homes in that range. And maybe we're a little bit warmer in the summer if we're being a little bit misery with our electricity or something like that. But we can go to something like a Phoenix oyster during the warmer part of the year. They like the fruit up to like 90 degrees Fahrenheit. So there's no problem with those. I'm actually now growing Phoenix oysters in my bioreactor compost. I'm also growing another oyster called Patty, or another mushroom. It's not an oyster at all, called Patty Straw, in another one of my bioreactors, and see which one works better. But you can, since you can grow indoors, and you can do it with really sophisticated tools, or you can do it with something as simple as basically a cheap indoor greenhouse like we use for starting seeds, or a tub, like a Rubbermaid tub. Just wanted to be clear, mushrooms do want light, especially at the point where they're getting ready to fruit. Light is actually pretty important. They don't need the amount of light that, let's say, a tomato or a pepper does, but they do need light. It also orients them as to where to fruit. And I want to just pause for a second here and talk about why they fruit in the first place. What's going on when they do that? Because this is important to know. They fruit to reproduce. The same reason a tomato fruits. Now, they're not a plant. Mushrooms are not a plant, and they're not an animal. They're literally called the third kingdom. They're fungi. But there is no benefit to a mushroom in fruiting unless it's going to reproduce. So when that mushroom opens up, it begins to let spores go. And those spores are what colonize other places. And just like plants, you know, they make billions of spores. And out of a billion spores, maybe a very small handful actually find a place to reproduce. And that's their strategy. They colonize, they decompose, they fruit, they spread spore, and then they propagate themselves, you know, further. The reason that you need to know this is if you're going to start growing mushrooms at home and you're going to confine your activities to, you know, some stuff like this right here. Hi, you Ken Berry, anyway. And you're doing a little bit of it here and there. It's not that really big of a deal. If you're going to start upscaling, you need some mechanism, either a vent or a filter device, that prevents you from filling your home with spores. A little bit here and there is not a problem. We walk through the woods. There's mushrooms in there. We walk through lots of places in the right, you know, stores or mushrooms. Nobody dies. If you heavily cultivate mushrooms, large amounts over time in a confined area, you can develop something called mushroom lung. And so some of the stuff I'm going to show you in a bit to do this cultivation helps that from becoming a problem in a variety of ways. But the boom room that I'm getting, or I actually just arrived Sunday, yesterday afternoon, I'm really excited about, literally has a fan that you vent to a window and it blows the spores outside. I've also seen people take those fans and put a really high-grade filter on them, and that blows the spores into the filter, and every so often you change the filter out. But you need to be aware of the fact that these things are looking for a place to colonize. And what they want is warm, wet. That's the kind of mushrooms that are really easy, like warm. You know what's warm? Your lungs. I'm not saying you need to be a freak about this, but you just, if you start upping your production, you need to be thinking about this. All right. Another thing is those low barrier to entry. So I'm going to show you some equipment here in a bit that costs a bit of money. It's not real expensive, but it costs a bit of money. But, you know, how much are things like this? You get three of these for like $6 at the grocery store, these containers. The material inside is coffee grounds. They're free if you drink coffee. They're a byproduct, right? And there's a lot of other things we can do. Straw, you can get a giant, you know, bale of straw that will grow tons of mushrooms if you're using that as a substrate for a few bucks. Right. You can also use sawdust pellets, which, you know, use for like smokers, grills, cookers. And, you know, a big bag of those is like $12 at Home Depot or Lowe's. By the way, if you have a pellet smoker, pellet grill, anything like that, and you're buying your wood pellets at like the grocery store, stop that. Stop that. Home Depot, Lowe's, other of the big box stores like that, they generally sell a 40-pound bag for the same cost as a 20-pound bag at the grocery store. And you probably don't want to be buying them on Amazon unless you just need to for whatever reason, because even though it might say ships free, that shipping is built into the price. And you get the best deal on like competition level pellets and stuff like that, either at a store that sells grills or at like, which they also grows to, Home Depot, Lowe's, right? Just saying. So you get one big bag of that and a bunch of coffee grinds and you can make a year's worth of mushrooms. So you're out almost nothing. And even some of the stuff I'm going to show you, if you want to keep it really simple, I'm going to show you a channel by a guy that uses nothing but Rubbermaid tubs, and they're a few bucks a piece too. And he uses a filter that you can buy that you tape over the holes so they can breathe, one, to keep contaminants out, but two, to keep spores in. And so it's really, really easy to do, low barrier to entry, affordable gear. Even the equipment I'm going to show you that seems expensive, when you price mushrooms, and now you give yourself the ability to produce, you know, pounds of mushrooms a week, it pays for itself very, very quickly. So I don't consider stuff expensive if it pays for itself. I don't care if it's $1,000. If it saves me $2,000 in the first year, I got paid $1,000 to buy it. That's the way I look at it. And some of the stuff we're talking about is very, very expensive. Again, grows on waste materials, straw, cardboard, coffee grounds. Again, I'm not going into how too deeply today, but as long, there's people that say, you know, you got to pressure cook it and all kinds of crap. To me, if you're getting into some of the more finicky, fussy stuff, maitake, hen of the woods and stuff like that, you might want to go to that level because you have so much invested in trying to get that to work. When it comes to like oysters and King Strophoria and Patty Straw and all these other really fast production mushrooms, if you've soaked that stuff in boiling water, there ain't hide nor hair of anything alive in there that can outcompete the mycelium network. But when you start seeing like blues and stuff, unless there's some weird mushroom strain that has it, like you want to see nice, pretty white. When you start seeing weird colors and stuff on a spawn block, it's probably been infected with some kind of mold that, or some kind of foreign fungus that you don't really want. But hey, you might want to separate it from other fruiting environments where it might spread, but you can always still try to fruit it. It's not that big of a deal. You're not out much. They're also very high nutrient. Now, Ken Berry's here. I would say that the mushroom fits just about every diet under the planet, though I don't know how Ken would feel about it being carnivore, because it's not, right? It's not an animal. So Ken can weigh in if he's still listening about whether he would consider mushrooms acceptable on a carnivore diet. But I'll tell you, they're damn sure acceptable on a keto diet, a primal diet, a paleo diet, a ketovore diet, right? A vegan diet, a vegetarian diet, the standard American shit diet. I don't know really any diet that excludes mushrooms. So they're universally acceptable to people, except the people that say, I don't like mushrooms. What I've found, though, really, is I've had people insist to me they don't like mushrooms. And when I ask them what kind of mushrooms they've eaten, inevitably, the only mushrooms they've ever had are sitting on a Pizza Hut pizza. They're the standard white button mushrooms. They probably came from Western PA, where they grow most of them in the country. And they're not that great, especially cooked that way. I mean, I'll eat them. I like that mushroom, that real mushroomy flavor. I actually really, really, really like. And that's a great thing to me. But I get why it's very assertive. And when they're cooked on a pizza, they're only like half cooked. There's a big difference between heavily sauteed and cooked on top of a pizza. And that mushroom flavor floats over the whole pizza, where even if you pick them off, you still taste it. If you don't like it, you don't like it. I get that. But there's a big deal, like what I did yesterday. We did a smoked chuck on the pellet smoker. And I took some shiitakes, cut the stems off. I always dehydrate those, make them into a mushroom powder to make mushroom stock from them, because that flavor is really good from those. But then I sliced them and I marinated them with some ginger and a little bit of brown sugar and some Worcestershire sauce and some other things. And then I drained them after that marination. And when I cooked them, I put them in a hot carbon steel skillet. And I took another skillet and I set it on top to push the water out of them. And I sauteed them until they browned. And they tasted more like some sort of a meat, like a marinated Asian beef, than they tasted like a mushroom. There are mushrooms that you can make taste like crab. I mean, literally, it will taste like crab meat, and that is lion's mane. Cooked a certain way, lion's mane will taste like crab meat. If you like crab meat, you'll like lion mane cooked that way. If you cook lion's mane another way with different seasoning, it literally tastes like steak. Now, I'm not going to say it tastes like a USDA prime grass-fed ribeye that was dry-aged. I'm saying it's more like meat than what you would think of as a mushroom. If you take a mushroom like a king oyster and those long, beautiful stems that are about the diameter of a scallop, if you cut them about as thick as a scallop, like a ocean scallop, the big ones, put some crosshashes in them and follow a recipe I won't give you here today. You can look it up. And you cook those in a pan and you saute those. They taste an awful lot like a scallop. I think part of that is the mind interprets what it sees as what it knows, and that helps your taste buds say, okay, this is a scallop, but they have a texture very similar to a perfectly done scallop. They have a flavor very similar to it. If you take pink oyster mushrooms and cook them the right way, cut up and cook until they're a little bit crispy and use a little bit of like smoked paprika with it, it tastes like freaking bacon. Okay, this is why I'm doing this today. Everything I just gave you, you can grow in an apartment closet on stuff that you throw away. On your garbage, you can grow all that. Now, again, the king oyster, unlike everything else I said, requires a little bit more sophistication. Not that you can't do it, but if you want consistent results and good form and large mushrooms, it's one of those that needs a little extra environmental control. But you can do all that, and all of those you can culture yourself, or once you get your hands on some spawn, you just can keep multiplying spawn. You can buy one block of spawn, and if you know how to do this, you can multiply that spawn 1,000-fold, and every time you're going to make a fruiting block, you can take a little bit off of it and make another batch and keep going. It is perpetual, perpetual, perpetual. Think of it like you guys that do aquaponics and hydroponics. What do you do with your green onion tips? You throw them in there, and they grow back, and you cut them off. And then what happens? They grow back, and then you cut them off, and they grow back. There's a difference between growing a green onion. You can buy a bunch of green onions for 99 cents and growing something like a king oyster mushroom. You know that shit I said about you can make it taste like scallops? There's other things you can do it. But you know what they cost? You know what they cost at the Whole Foods? Not Whole Foods. What is it? Central Market down in Yuppie Land. The only place I've seen them around here, I can reliably get them in a store. $24 a pound. and it grows on garbage in a Rubbermaid tub. And you can grow that in your house. Now, you can see why I think this is an important topic for people that are in those smaller locations that want to be able to produce their own nutrition. And there's very high value to the nutrient and the medicinal properties of all mushrooms. Even the shitty little white button ones that I'm not that much in love with, right? There's nothing there. And Suburban Homestead Outfitter says, remember to take caution with spores and lungs. We actually covered that earlier, but thanks for repeating it because it's true. But they are very high nutrient and they are a complete protein. Now, I've heard people say some dumb shit. Oyster mushrooms have more protein than meat. No. Or oyster mushrooms have more protein than many meats. No. The grams per ounce is a fraction of what beef or chicken or pork or fish or anything with a face has. They do not have more protein as in grams for grams of protein per ounce of mushrooms. Okay? They don't. And I usually hold questions to the end, but Roar Tribe, no, I do not have, that's Patrick. I do not have a how-to on my YouTube channel yet, but I'm going to give you some resources today with other people doing that for you in just a minute. But that will be coming because we're starting to up production now instead of just playing with it. But when I say complete protein, what I mean is there are different amino acids that we get in protein when we eat various forms of meat or other things. If you eat beans, you get some of what are known as the essential amino acids. An essential amino acid means you have to consume it or you will become deficient in that and eventually protein deficient, and it will lead to illnesses and eventually death. If I take away all your protein, you will die. If I take away all your fat from your diet, so you eat nothing but carbohydrates and protein or carbohydrates and fat, eventually you will die with either one. And if you try to live on just carbohydrates, if you could pull it off with no protein and no fat, you will also die. If you take away all your carbohydrates, eat zero carbohydrates for your entire life, and you can be perfectly healthy. Protein and fat you have to have. You're not going to get much fat from a mushroom, like none, but you do get a complete protein. And what I mean by that is you will get all the essential amino acids. And some of them we don't even need a lot of if we're getting enough protein otherwise. So this is why vegans in particular hone in. There's two big reasons that vegans hone in on mushrooms as an option. One is because of what the complete amino acid profile, and two is because you can make it taste like meat. And I don't mean to pick on any vegans, but no one's out there trying to figure out how to make turkey taste like broccoli. Okay, but there's a hell of a lot of people trying to figure out how to make something taste like meat without it being meat. And what I'll say is some of the best cooking recipes you will get for your mushrooms is vegan chefs that are doing things with mushrooms. And I think that that's one of the places, like when I shared this with, I shared some of the stuff you can do with Chef Ken Daniels. I'm like, don't let the vegan thing throw you. Look at what you can do with the mushroom. So I might make a lion's mane and it'll come out a lot like a steak. I'm not doing it to replace a steak. I'm doing it because it freaking tastes good that way. And now you're getting a complete protein and high nutrient. You're also getting all of the health benefits as well. Mushrooms in general are highly anti-cancer. Almost every mushroom has some anti-cancer properties. Some are more targeted toward where they actually improve your energy level. Some your ability to cognitively think. Lion's mane is known as very anti-carcinogenic and also very much enabling people to get through things like brain fog and stuff like that. So the more of this stuff we're putting into our diet, this is why I've been recommending the Sacred 7 mushroom powder for, 5 years now. And every single day, a half a teaspoon goes in my first cup of coffee of the day, every single day. And yet settles out a little bit. What I do, you get down to that last little, half ounce, swirl it around and shoot it. Just shoot it down and get it down. It ain't the best thing in the world, that sludge at the bottom. But, hey, but all I'm saying is there's an incredible health benefit to this stuff. And you can produce it yourself. The easy propagation from stems for perpetual production should not be overlooked. Now, you can make tissue samples from any mushroom. Okay? It's not, something you have to go to school and become like a nuclear physicist to be able to do, or a molecular biologist. But it can get a little bit dicey with doing it right and getting up. And sometimes even pros find a mushroom they really like in the wild and they try to cultivate it and things go wrong, or it will produce mycelium, but they can't get it to fruit. There's some mushrooms that are almost impossible to be farmed. Morels being, you know, the person that figures out how to reliably farm morels indoors is going to be worth a freaking fortune. Okay. But when we're talking about mushrooms, especially oysters, when you cut an oyster mushroom's stem and you look, there's a spongy white material inside the stem. It is basically pure mycelium. And you can literally just cut it up and throw it into substrate. If you wanted to do it the right way, what you do is you cut that stem, and then whatever you're cutting it with, you want to make sure it's sterilized. And you can do that with alcohol. I have one of those little like creme brulee butane flame torches. I just flame anything that I want sterile. Like even when I'm pruning trees and I might have like some blight on one tree and I want to spread it to the other, I just carry that in my pocket and I just hit the clippers with it as I move from tree to tree to sanitize. So you do that, you cut it down the middle, and then you use like a razor, like an X-Acto knife or like a scalpel, and cut out and pull out just the center because it's been protected by the outer sheath and it's not going to be affected with anything. I've never done that. I've just chopped it up and thrown it in there. And you can even see there was just like a whole bunch of stems I threw in the bottom of this, and that's all I did. And this, I can tell you by looking at it, this is a very well colonized substrate, and that is pure white. The only thing I see that's any color is a little bit of pink where a stem is or that, because it was a pink oyster. So you can do it either way, but there's the right way and then there's the okay way. Like the low tech way. But the fact that you can do it, is huge. The fact that you can, especially if you select a few strains of mushroom that you produce reliably and you learn what to eat, whether it's lion's mane or any of these other ones too, if you learn how to use the fruiting body itself to cultivate the next round, or if you simply don't always, you never use all your substrate, you keep it from being infected, you can go on almost forever with production. Or, you know, maybe eventually a spawn gets an infection, it starts to poop out or whatever. You can still buy one more block of it and start all over. I mean, this is the definition of self-reliance, right? It's more the definition of self-sufficiency, right? Self-reliance, we measure in how long we stay self-reliant. Self-sufficient, we measure what percentage. You can become 100% self-sufficient in the production of basic mushrooms. And I don't know a lot of things that you can do that have the ability to do it anywhere, small space, have this much bang for the buck, this easy to do, basically grow it on waste and never stop doing it, and eventually never have to buy something from anybody again. Suburban Homestead said, pinks are like a weed. Great summer, grow very easy. I agree. And there's some other things I'm going to talk about you can do with spawn other than just fruit the spawn directly. There is a case for doing this outdoors, and I've been trying to figure out how to make that work in my climate, which can be difficult specifically this time of year, as the humidity will eventually, by God, please, go away, and we'll get out of our humid state. We're going to get a very arid state. It'll be like the desert in Arizona for about 3 months when that happens before the humidity comes back. And you can upgrade to high-value gourmet varieties like king oyster or chestnut or a bunch of these other really expensive mushrooms with some basic equipment. And I want to show you some of the equipment if you're on the video right now. One, I'm going to tell you, I have a discount deal I'm working with Northspore, but I'm going to bet you the discount that they do when this sale goes away, it still won't be as inexpensive as it right now. This is kind of like for small scale production, the kind of ultimate. This is like an entry level for small commercial scale if you want it to be. It's called the Boom Room 2 automated Martha Tent mushroom grow system. So it's five shelves to fruit mushrooms on. You can fit probably six blocks per shelf. It's got the vent system to get rid of your spores either into a filter or out a window. It's got the controllers. It's got the humidifier. It's got all the sensors. It's got everything. And they're normally $525. And like I said, when I reached out to them, I asked if they would sell me one at cost, That was my goal, just to buy one from them at cost. And I said, I'll do a review for you. And they said, we'll just send you one. So I don't hate money, and I wasn't about to say no. But I'll tell you what, I think this is at $389.99, and I have not made any affiliate deals with them. I am not going to get anything out of this. If it were me and I wanted to do this and I wanted to be able to grow the more complicated mushrooms, I wanted to be able to go to the intermediate and advanced levels when you go on these sites and you look at the different spawn, I would buy this today, because I would have. If they would have said, hey, our cost is $380, I would have said, here's a credit card number, send it on. I wouldn't even have hesitated. And this is marked down today 26%. I'm thinking whatever deal they come up with for MSB, it ain't going to be 26% off. Most companies can't sustain a discount like that. I'm guessing that they're looking to bring in more customers, and they know if they sell you a boom room and you can reliably produce, you'll probably become a long-term customer. I'm thinking that's like a loss leader price is what I'm saying. But I can understand when somebody says, I don't want to spend that out of money, because it's still a significant amount of money. The tent they have, this is part of what sold me on their product in the first place, is this is not like the little greenhouses that I recommended. It is built differently. The people that make, again, what they call Martha tents, basically it's DIY version of this. First of all, the sale price they have, I don't think you can do a DIY with the full Monty, right? The sensors, the vent, all of it for that price, even with a cheaper greenhouse. But they will sell you just the tent for $119.99. Part of this is the way the bottom is so it doesn't leak, and the way everything form fits and the way it has set up for vents. And my gut is, now I've not seen anybody do this, and I'm not saying you can. I'm saying my gut is, with a little bit of redneck engineering, I don't see why, if you had one of these and you wanted to expand your production, you couldn't basically make one set of control systems work for both of them. I bet it could be done. I don't know it can be done, but I'm betting it can be done, that it could be modular. And when we get, I think his name's Matt. Sorry, dude, if I got your name wrong, but that's what I think his name is. If I get him on the air, we'll ask him about, can you kind of daisy chain some of these things together? Now, let's say you don't want to spend that much money. And you want a more complete system. They have these things that they call boomer bins, and I don't think it has anything to do with the boomer generation. They call them boom because, boom, there's mushrooms, right? And they have these various different bins. Now, one of the things I want to warn you about, I've looked at this market heavily. There's a lot of people selling tubs to grow mushrooms in, and most of them are itty-bitty, and you'd be lucky to fit one block in there and have room for the fruiting body. So I would really stay away from those. I would fabricate your own before I would buy some cheap-ass little piece of shit. These things, if you just want the tub, they sell the tubs for like $80, and that's with a block to fruit, that's with material, that's with filters, that's with everything, $82. They have one that's automated, basically a mini version of the boom room, for $189. And you could grow a lot of freaking mushrooms in that. And there's a bunch of different varieties, and they have amazing customer support. Again, I'm not selling for this company because, you know, they didn't pay me to. But you can even get the basic tub with the filters for $45. And you can also buy from Northmore their filters, and you can buy from other suppliers filters to make your own. And with that, I want to kind of show you, I'm not going to play this guy's video because for the audio people, it would just be a mess. You can see this dude here on YouTube, and he is called Fun Guy Fruits, FunGuyFruits, Fun Guy Fruits. He uses these tubs, and he grows in substrate that's just straight in the bottom of the tub, no bags whatsoever, and he calls it the no-touch monotub. No fan, no mist, set it up, keep the environment. Now, he does have temperature controls and some other things. You can watch the video. I have links to all this in the video notes today. But basically, once it sets in the rack, don't touch it until it fruits. Everything stays closed. It stays moist enough just by doing that, and you can make it this dead simple. And these tubs like this, you know, what are they, $10 at Lowe's? I call it Lowe's Depot. That way I don't have to explain to my wife which one I'm going to. Where are you going, Lowe's Depot? Well, which one is it, Lowe's Depot? Because I don't know yet. It all depends on all the other shit I have to do, which one's going to be easier to get in and out of the parking lot. Right, so I just call it Lowe's Depot. Now, Amy B is saying a 5-gallon bucket for the substrate with some 1-inch holes for fruiting bodies to grow outside the bucket will work really well. I agree if you have the right environment and the right mushroom at the same time. You're not going to do that very well here, but we're going to work on it. We're going to work on trying to figure something. Like, I didn't know the last time I tried that about something called the Phoenix oyster that likes to fruit at 90 degrees. I didn't know that you could grow patty straws, and they like to fruit at 100 freaking degrees, and I got 3 months of that shit. So we'll see, right? But for indoors, that right there, and again, what you can see he did is he put a hole, and he said those are 2-inch filters. He put a 1-inch hole in the tub, 2-inch filter over it. This is to do two things. One is to reduce the amount of contaminants that can get in, and two, to reduce the amount of spores that will come out. So exactly how well that works, I don't know, but you can take a look at this dude's channel. Again, Fun Guy Fruits, F-U-N, Fun Guy, clever dude, you know, playing with fungi. If you want to go as cheap as possible, his method is probably for you. So you have the ability to do, like, literally I have fruited stuff like this sitting on a shelf and just put a piece of plastic bag with some holes in it so it can breathe over it and miss it every day. And I've been able to fruit with these just out of those little holes right there. I'm trying to see if this one, and this is, again, this is a blue oyster spawn from a store-bought mushroom. And I'm trying to see if this will fruit with no help at all, just sitting on the shelf, and I just miss the top once a day. And we'll see. And if it doesn't, then I have this block of spawn that I'll go put somewhere outside, and it'll colonize. And it'll be useful for that. There's all kinds of comments coming in here. Pinks love heat. Yellows aren't bad in heat either. Good to know, Suburban Homestead. Thank you. That's why I'm going to, and I'm going to do another thing too. I've started to notice that I do have mushrooms here. Just none of them are really the ones you want to eat. I've got, I can't think of what they're called now, but basically they're a false something, and they have a blue spore print, and they won't kill you, but they'll make you puke your absolute guts out. I have Destroying Angel, which is one of the most dangerous mushrooms in the world that will kill the shit out of you. You literally shouldn't even touch them and then not touch your mouth before you wash your hands. That might be going a little bit far, but, I mean, literally they are one of the most deadly substances on the planet. But I've also found some other ones that are edible, but they're like, nah, you can eat it, but you probably don't want to. They're not that great. But what I'm going to start doing is inoculating the areas that are producing their own fungi already, because I know it's a fungi-conducive environment. Some other things that I've seen by following Mushroom Mountain and North Spore on, like, Facebook and X and all, is that there's people doing some pretty creative things. One of the things people are doing, they're buying a fruiting block, like a 5-pound block of inoculated spawn of whatever mushroom they want to grow. They bury the whole block in their garden. They dig a hole, stick it in the hole, and just barely cover it over. And then the mycelium network then goes crazy in the soil and the mulch and everything, but it also fruits right out of the block. Well, for those that are not on, this is like a pint jar, or it's a half pint jar, I guess, wide mouth jar. These fruiting blocks, I guess fruiting cylinders, they'll pop right out. They're about the size of a start plant. You could take one block of spawn and make 200 of these and plunk them in between all your plants with something like King Strophoria in your garden. I'm just saying, there's a lot of other ways to do this. I've seen people do it with laundry baskets with all the holes in them, and they fill it with pasteurized straw, and they layer it with oyster mushrooms, and the whole damn thing fruits. And go to the store, and even something that's easy to produce like an oyster mushroom, look at the cost. I paid $4.97 for 3.5 ounces of blue oyster mushroom that you can grow in a tub like this with a stem. Start thinking about, right? Start thinking about how much money this can save you. And if you're like, well, it really doesn't save me money because I don't eat mushrooms. But if you were eating mushrooms, you wouldn't be eating other things. And you might be eating some of higher quality you can produce for yourself. The other thing is, when it's all said and done, and you fruited it and you fruited it, and it says, I'm tired, boss. I quit. I'm done. This is some of the best compost in the world for your gardens, your potted plants, everything. And if you're fixed up on compost and you don't need it, I guarantee you, if you're producing, let's say, 10 of those a month, you know someone in your life that gardens that would kill to have this given to them so that they can use it in their compost in their gardens. It may actually go endemic on your property and start producing outdoors for you, or it's just simply great compost or some variation thereof. You're moving toward the fungal dominance in your garden with the material, even if it's other fungi that really take over and benefit from it. So it's a fantastic end product, you know, end byproduct, I guess, after you've done everything you can with it. Eventually you just have good compost. And who the hell doesn't want more good compost? And like I said, if you're that guy that would be doing this in your apartment, and you got your little apartment porch garden outside growing your herbs and stuff, and you're like, I ain't got no more room. I promise you someone wants it. You've got something of value that to you is garbage. B. Hendrix, and this people keep saying this, oyster mushrooms, mycelium decimates the nematodes in your compost garden. It also kills the bad nematodes too, by the way. Everything in nature kills something else. Everything in nature lives off the death of something else, and that's okay. Now, if you are really trying to up a beneficial nematode population, you probably don't want to use oysters in your garden. That's something I learned this year myself. So the oyster mushroom spawn isn't going anywhere near my garden, and in the future, I won't use it in compost anymore. That's why I've started working with paddy straw in my compost, and I think that's going to be one of the better mushrooms. King Strophoria and paddy straw. And then Crystal says you can always buy new good nematodes. They'll come back. They'll come back. And what the last guy I had on about shrooms said, yes, if you use oysters in like compost and it wipes out your nematodes. But, you know, since I take a year to make compost, it's kind of done its thing and it's done and it poops out. And the diversity will actually be higher after that cycle's run through than if it had never happened. So we all have to make decisions like that for ourselves. But I'm not going to be using oysters in the garden or the compost directly anymore. That doesn't mean that I wouldn't take oyster mushroom spawn and crumble it into a potted plant. Or once that spawn is fully done, that I might not use it anyway as a compostable. Like dump it all into my pit and then the ducks work it over and everything else. And then it goes into the bioreactor next year. At that point, I'm not worried about it doing anything to a nematode. But there's actually a lot of mushrooms kill certain soil organisms. And most of them kill soil organisms that you don't want. King Strophoria kills quite a bit of stuff. It's just not something I've seen people grow indoors much at all. But that's probably because it does so well outdoors. That's something I might play with indoors too, because I get unreliable outdoor fruiting. But I'm thinking about some timing ways I can change that and maybe be a little bit more successful with it. Again, the versatile flavors mimic, meets, and convert skeptics. I look at mushrooms when people say I don't like mushrooms a lot, like I look at beer when somebody tells me they don't like beer. How many beers have you had? You know, a lot of like it, so not a lot. No, I mean, how many varieties? When anybody tells me they don't like something and it's not a one-off thing, like it's something with lots of variety and lots of methods of preparation, I mentioned one way that I do shiitakes. Here's another way I do simple way I do shiitakes. Again, cut the stems off, cut up the, slice the tops, and then saute them really hard. Hit them with a couple ounces of bourbon, flame off the bourbon, burn off the alcohol. And at that point, drop in finely sliced shallots and saute those. And don't worry about overcooking mushrooms. You can cook the hell out of mushrooms, especially shiitakes. So you bring those in. And then at the very end, big lob of butter and cook the butter till it just starts to brown and gets that nuttiness. I've put that in front of people who swore to God they didn't like mushrooms, and they do that shit. You know, you tell somebody, just try it, and they act like they're 4 years old, and they take the knife, and they cut the little piece of mushroom smaller. Good Lord. You know, the thing is, you can trick yourself into not liking something being that obstinate, but everybody who's at least stuck it in their mouth and ate it and tried it, went, you know what, that's pretty freaking good. That doesn't taste like a mushroom at all. Actually, that's what a good mushroom tastes like. And again, things like hen of the woods, chicken of the woods, king oyster, lion's mane, these things can have these incredible flavors and textures if they're just prepared right And the biggest thing is not being afraid to overcook them. Cook them really good. Push that moisture out of them. And maybe I'll do a show on cooking mushrooms in the future. They are great for your physical health, obviously. We've talked about that already. But cultivation of mushrooms, I believe, is good for your mental health, especially the person that can't have a garden or doesn't have much of a garden. Or you have that really long period where you don't garden because you live up north where it freezes. And when the seed packet says when the ground can be worked, it actually means something to you. Because when I read that down here, I'm like, I can work the ground any damn day of the year except the extreme cold, you know, rare event like we had 4 years ago. Like, I can go out there in the middle of January and we still work the ground and the plants will still die and not grow because it's too cold. But if you live where, when you read that, you're like, oh, I get it. That's going to be the end of March, beginning of April before I can put a shovel in the ground reliably because it's going to be freaking frozen. Then this is something you can be doing during that down period. It's also, again, I think it's good for your mental health, not just because of the nutrient value, but the activity and the investigation. And I think that as we become adults, we become less and less curious. And this is a big part of why I always try to stay curious. And this is why I guess some people would say I'm a polymath because I learn a lot of things. When something really gets to the point where, like, I kind of know that, I want to go do something else. And this is a great something else to do because if you really get into this, like, I don't think I'll get that deep into it. I'll get a system going that produces enough for us to eat and be happy. Right? That's what I'll do. But if you really get into this, you will absolutely never wear it out. You can be a legit mycologist with a college degree. You can go into mushroom cultivation. You can do it for 25 years, and you don't know jack diddly shit versus the whole of what there is to be discovered. I mean, people like Paul Stamets have literally figured out how to make beehives out of mycelium to get rid of mites. We have no idea what we can unlock with this third kingdom. And so it is a great mental exploration. It's a great physical result. Again, anti-cancer properties, high in vitamins. They're very hard to get from any other edible source, especially if you don't eat a lot of meat. I mean, I do, but for a lot of people, that might matter. And in a grid-down long-term situation, the ability to produce something like that is incredibly valuable. And you don't just have to produce edible mushrooms. You can produce reishi. Right? One of the best medicinal mushrooms in the world. You don't want to eat it. It tastes like crap, but it's incredibly useful as a medicinal. So you can grow medicinal and culinary mushrooms this way. It will also develop two sets of skills that I think are incredibly important and also would be very useful for homeschoolers. Scientific skill set and homestead skill set, right? And when I say homestead skill set, that's pretty broad because that's cultivation. That's making compost. That's cooking. I got more mushrooms than I can use, and they only have a storage life this long. That's dehydration. That's freeze drying. That's canning. That's other activities that I'm going to hold off on. But, like, if you have more than you need of something, you know what you can do. You can trade it for something you don't have that you do need, or money, which will buy what you need later. Right. So it has this whole plethora of skill set development that, again, you can take as far as you want. It encourages curiosity in food, ecology, and foraging. I don't know anybody that's got into mushroom cultivation that hasn't started looking around and see what you can find in the wild. Be really, 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 just to be clear, really, really, really fucking careful because there are mushrooms that will make you shit your brains out, puke your guts out, or die. Or make you so high you'll climb up an oak tree and try to fight with God, right? You need to know what you're doing. You need positive verification, but you won't get hurt by looking at stuff. You won't get hurt by taking pictures, getting some of the mushroom identification groups on Facebook. And this is what they generally want. I've been in several groups. They all pretty much want the same thing. They want you to take a picture of it from the top and the side. They want you to take a picture of the underneath so they can see the gills. They may, if they're not sure, ask you to do a spore print. You'll need to learn how to do that. A lot of times they want to see, like, if you pull it out of the ground, if it's not something growing off of a tree, what's the bottom of the stem look like? Sometimes they want to see the middle of the stem. These are real experts. So no, they're giving you advice from 1,000 miles away. They don't want to kill you. But the big thing they want to know, where'd you find it? When'd you find it? See the top of the mushroom and the bottom of the mushroom. And most stuff that we can reliably forage and eat. That will be enough. Now, there are some families and varieties where there's some really toxic ones that look a lot like, I wouldn't mess with that. But you will want to start looking around in the forest, in the woods for other mushrooms if you start cultivating. And you're going to be wanting to find something that, hey, I can take that, take a tissue from it, and I can produce it at home, even if it doesn't work. The mental exercise there is out flipping standing. So it encourages you to be more curious about what you eat, how you medicate yourself, the ecology around you, and foraging. All of those are strong in the world of homesteading, self-sufficiency, self-reliance, and independence. It is Chuck Norris Gun Club says, shiny purple mushroom, not good. Don't ask how I know. Those sound like the ones that make you trip balls and climb a tree and fight with God to me, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But if you're going to get in that, I'm not going into that world today at all with the whole psilocybin thing. But I believe there's an incredible value there if you know what you're doing, you take the right amount, and you have somebody to guide you through what you're going to go through. Right. And there's also the whole microdose and everything. I'm not going to get into that today. But at some point, I will bring somebody on to talk about that as well, because one of the things I've researched and I found this fascinating, there's war vets, for instance. There's many different groups of people. War vets is one we have enough of to be a true cohort, and we can see what works with massive PSD problem. Stress problems. And they have taken the medication. They have taken the counseling. They have done everything to get over their PTSD possible. And they still have problems. And some of them, under a guided situation, take a large amount of hallucinogenic mushrooms and go through that. And when they come out the other end of it, it's gone. Not for the next day or like, it's gone. It rewires them. Randall Carlson and Paul Stamets both have talked about those experiences and saying that you can have like one experience and it can alter you forever in a positive way. Again, do not do it on your own. Don't go find some shiny mushroom under a cow turd and think you can just sit down and eat it. And I mean, even one of the absolute experts at this, Paul Stamets, who I would trust my life in anything he recommended, is that safe to eat? Don't eat too much of that, whatever. His first experience, before he really knew what he knew, I remember him telling his story, and I was talking about climbing up an oak tree and talking to God and trying to start a fight with him. It's pretty much what happened. Not quite that, but he did climb up a tree. So he got a bag of mushrooms. It was either him or Randall that said this. And instead of like using how much they were supposed to, they just ate the whole freaking bag of these mushrooms that they got off some stoner. And a storm was coming, and he climbs up the tree, and it makes me think of the scene in Forrest Gump where Lieutenant Dan's up on the mast of the ship yelling and screaming in the middle of the storm. But he was saying like he could see the trees floating in the distance, and it felt like his hairs on his arms were moving with the trees. And I'm thinking, that's because the lightning was making your hair stand up, fool. Don't do that, right? But there is something there. But that's not where we're at today. So let's leave that. It also, if you learn how to do this, it opens up the doors to community trade and barter. Again, when you have something of value and you have more than you need, then you can sell it or trade it. And this is one of those things that, you know, if you know how to do it and other people don't, it's almost like sorcery, right? That you can do. And then there's just the reality. Like, not everybody that listens to this show today and even likes to eat mushrooms and finds this interesting, and it's like, I'm glad he did that show. Not everybody's going to grow mushrooms. We all limit what we do to what we most want to do for the return that we get from it. And there's people that are like, if I want mushrooms, I'll just buy them. But if their next door neighbor was doing it, well, they'd buy those. And this would fold in really good to like the micro CSA model I've talked about, like the person like me that has about 50 laying ducks. So they have a duck egg business. And then they say, well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get some racks. I'm going to start doing microgreens, you know, and then they you know, put together a small weekly or biweekly thing of product that you put a set price on, and you market to your existing customers off your loss leader product, your eggs. And then eventually you get this core of products together. And every week for X dollars, they get whatever's available, that model. Freaking mushrooms, man. Like, you're probably not going to, in your three-bedroom, two-bath house, grow enough mushrooms to become a supplier to, like, even a single grocery store is going to probably need more than you can produce. But you could serve 20, 30, 40 customers like that, small-scale production, no problem. If you went to the level of, like, building a climate-controlled, tough-shed-type environment, like a 12 by 24 with everything in it, you probably could serve 100 customers, regular customers. You probably could serve a couple small restaurants, high-end restaurants. And if you could find that with microgreens, you'd really have something. John Dowie, somebody let John know about this episode if he hasn't found it already by himself, because this would be a good add-on for someone like him as a dedicated grow room and grow space. When you start looking at product that sells for $20+ a pound, you're getting, now of course John's selling microgreens, he sells by the freaking gram like it's dope, right? But you get what I'm saying. This is a high dollar product. And when you get good at it, the production becomes very reliable, and it might even be seasonal. If you have certain mushrooms that need a lower temperature to fruit well, and you don't want to air condition an entire room down to 60 degrees, maybe those mushrooms get grown more in your winter where you're actually heating a little bit to keep it up that high. And maybe some of the stuff you won't want to spend so much money on cooling. Maybe you go into the Phoenixes and the Goldens and what have you in the warmer months. But this is a product that can become a profit center. And you might also find yourself setting people up to fruit their own mushrooms and providing fruiting blocks to them. You know, you could maybe make that part of your thing. If you set somebody up with a monotub system and, you know, once a month with the product they're buying from you, you add in a fruiting block. That's something else you can do because it's easy to make them. And it's easy to buy one, like one 5-pound fruiting block that'll cost you about $28. You can make 100 fruiting blocks. The only cost is the material in the blocks. It really is the kind of thing that you can do. I said, Chuck Norris Gun Club said, I know you can sell a square foot of wheatgrass in New York City for $10. Yeah, there's a lot of things like that. And this is one of them. Small scale, quick turnover, high dollar return. So it has that community trade bartering, and it's scalable into that profitable home-based business. And it doesn't have to be huge. You can grow it as big as you want. There are companies like, if you go to Northmore and you click on About Us and you look at the team, you realize the size of that company that's been built almost 100% online. Just the sheer number of people that work for that company tells you this is not a teeny tiny company. Then you go look at Mushroom Mountain. I love working with Olga and them, and she's got a couple people working for her, but she doesn't have a team that size. And she's got her niche carved out. They've got their niche carved out. And then there are people like the couple we had on a few weeks ago. You know, they're doing a very small operation, but they're growing very specific mushrooms for a very specific purpose, and they're scaling that business out. So it has that ability to scale based on what you want to do with it. It's all up to you. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed today's show. I have a few questions that I saw with my one good eye, and so we'll go ahead and answer them, and then we'll wrap up. Christopher says, why is a sterile environment so important for small-scale mushrooms but not greenhouse? I visited Elijah Mushroom Farm, and we could walk into all the greenhouses without gloves or anything. You don't need it to be sterile all the time, first of all. But when you're growing in a greenhouse, and that would be like growing in the open, so you're doing buckets or beds or something inside a greenhouse, and they're growing mushrooms in there as a product, well, it's obviously not going to be sterile. The reason they're so hip on sterility with material is when you take a small container like this and you're starting out with a very small amount of mycelium or a very small amount of spawn, there's a competition between all microorganisms that want to colonize something that's wet, damp, warm, organic matter. And think about how fast, if you spray water on a piece of bread and keep it wet on your countertop, it'll start turning all different colors with mold. So when you go into these smaller environments, you have actually a higher risk of contamination while you're in that culture stage. Now, I've done mushrooms outdoors to get a block of mushroom, 5-pound block of mushroom spawn, and fill a wheelbarrow with wood chips and soak it down with a hose and just mix the spawn into it and throw it out in a garden bed and get King Strophoria popping up 6 months later. It doesn't have to be sterile all the time, but it depends on what you're doing. And when you're in a business and you're trying to grow a product that's a $20 product, and you make 50 fruiting blocks, and they all get contaminated, you can in one go lose thousands or tens of thousands of dollars. The other side of it is most of the people that get serious about this, they go into a very scientific mode, and they're showing you the right way. Doesn't mean it's the only way, but it's the most reliable, consistent way. You'll see certain recipes for spawn material include things like adding gypsum. Do you have to do it? No. Will it improve your results? Yes, that's why they do it. So it's not that you have to. It's that there really is a need if you want consistency to be consistent yourself from your end. Trial and Error says, is there a link to take advantage of the sale? I guess you're talking about the boom room. Yes, I have links in the video or the audio notes for you, but I have no problem right now going. I'm getting it for you. Just give me a second here. Grow kit substrates. Of course, I can't find it now. Monotubes and kits. Martha tents and systems, and I will get this link and I'll put it in the auto chat for you or the live stream chat right now. There you go. And I don't know if you can link to it, but if you just go to northspore.com and when you're at Northspore, why don't I just show it? You go into shop. Let me get it up on the screen. So when you're at the main Northspore website, go to shop, and then down here you'll see grow chambers and monotubs and kits. Martha tents and systems is the one where you'll definitely find the boom room too, or just use their search box and search for one word boom room and you will find it. And it, again, it's on sale normally $5.25. It's on sale for $3.89. I don't think you can buy these components even if you get them somewhere else and build this for that price. I really don't. I think it's one of the best prices out there. Again, I am working on getting a discount going with them. But if I wanted one of those, I wouldn't wait for my discount. I don't think it's going to matter that you do. And because usually when somebody puts something on sale and they're a discount vendor, you can't stack the discount with the sale. Sometimes you can when it's like a small sale or it's, but when you have something discounted at 20%, I mean, I've even had vendors email me and say, hey, man, we got a sale coming up. I just want you to know. I just had one, right? We want you to know you can't, your people can't stack the code, right? We can't, one of the things I really want people to understand, I don't beat these people up for discounts. I do say you should do something good enough to attract business or it's not worth doing, okay? I do have people that come to me and say, we want you to be an affiliate for us and we'll give you X percent of every sale. And I say, wait a minute, I like your product and I don't hate money, but I also love my members because they pay for my life. So why don't you take that percentage and do a discount for that percentage to my customers? And then I sometimes get pushback and what have you from people that don't really understand. Like I say, private members only website. But what if it gets out? First of all, you should be making money. You should not be losing money on this. But if you have a problem, we'll just change the code. And pretty, I've never had anybody have to change code other than their code expired. All the fear that every vendor has ever had, oh, my God, all my customers. No, it never happens. It's never happened once. There's companies that I got tired of dealing with their crap about it and told them, I don't need you. I'll find somebody else. Real quick, this isn't a question, but Anarchy says, thanks for a cool pro mycology forum today, Jack. Thank you for the 777 super chat. I really appreciate that. Bama Boat says Lion's Mane makes really good jerky. I've never tried that. I'd be open to it. I don't know if I want to wait that long to eat it, but because it's pretty damn good just cooked, and it's an impossible to find mushroom around here. I have never seen one. I've never heard of anybody finding one. It's really not the environment for them to grow, but they're easy to produce. They're actually a beginner's mushroom, a beginner to, you know, kind of moderate intermediate mushroom with just a little, like lion's mane one of those tubs I showed you on that dude's channel without all the sophistication, just closed up humidity filters, you grow lion's mane, especially in normal room temperature. And one thing I wanted to point out, like I said with the oysters, there's different strains and they have different preferable fruiting temperatures. Lion's mane is another one like that. There's many strains of lion's mane, and most mushrooms have multiple strains. So if you're like, I can't do it or whatever, because X, Y, and Z, man, you can. Just look at the different varieties. And like Mushroom Mountain's our existing partner, Norsemore, who's going to be a partner, they also on their websites under shop, like your different mushrooms, they even have them sorted by kind of beginner, intermediate, and advanced. And the beginner stuff is all really easy. Amy B, real quick, thank you for the $20 super chat. You says for gas money. Indeed, it shall be used as such because we always need gas money. And Roar Tribe says, we found a lion's mane last fall. It was so good, our first find in the wild. Yeah, I am envious that, you know, most of the country lives where mushrooms grow easily. This is something I guess I never really got into as far as producing them, because there's a little bit of spitefulness in me about having to. I grew up, as many of y'all know, as a teenager anyway, in north central Pennsylvania. And with that, there's mushrooms in the spring, there's mushrooms in the summer, and there's mushrooms in the fall. And there's just different mushrooms that are available different times of year. Your maitakes, your hen of the woods, you know, they're showing up near oak trees associated with oak roots in the fall. I mean, I've literally had times my uncle and I were out bow hunting, and oh shit, there's a hen of the woods. Well, I'll throw that in the back. Wait, there's another one. Like, we filled up half a pickup truck. We didn't even hunt that day. It's like, oh shit, there's expensive high-dollar mushrooms everywhere, like, just picking them up. Chicken of the woods is a primo mushroom, right? It's the orange. It kind of looks a little bit like maitake, but it's got bigger lobes. They're beautiful orange mushroom. They're highly sought after, highly priced. I literally considered them a second-tier mushroom. I literally considered them second, because they were so easy to find. Right, it was much harder to find a maitake than a cow, right? Maitake is a chicken, hen of the woods, and the cow is chicken of the woods, COW. Puffballs everywhere. Spongies everywhere. Inky tops everywhere. Like, you just, it was so blooming easy to forage mushrooms. And ones that were, like, very easy to identify. I don't know, like, this one, it could be this or that. I'm just not going to touch it, but, like, these certain ones, you just like, I know what that is. I know what that is. I know what that is. And the only time you couldn't forage mushrooms was the legit winter. And then when I moved here, everything changed. And it's just been a little like, why do I have to do all this fussy crap? But as I started playing with it, it's not fussy. It's not hard. It's easy. I've got pinks fruiting on my shelf next to my plants right now behind the camera. It's really easy to do. And golden oysters are really easy and delicious as well. That's another one to look at. Anyway, guys, I appreciate you tuning in today. As we wrap up, let me remind you about a couple other ways you can help support me and the show. One is by buying my book, Laws of Life, Ditch the System, Design Your Life. We have definitely, and I want to thank everybody that participated in the ambassador program, we have definitely got out into the wild with this book, because I know that most people that buy things that I recommend on Amazon go to tspaz.com first. In that first week, the number of orders for the book and the Kindle version, and the number of orders that I could see in my affiliate sales as a tspaz link, and the number of orders I could see on the KDP side where you actually see your book sales, were almost the same. Now, I'm going to say less than half of my orders are going through T-Spats. They're just buying the book off Amazon. That's exactly what I wanted to happen. So thank you for helping make that happen. I did correct the errors in the book. I don't know when the non-error books will stop shipping. I thought it would be immediate because they're supposed to be print on demand. But I ordered 5 author price copies last week. They got here about 2 weeks ago, I guess, ordered them after I made the change. And after the change took, at least it did on the site. And when the box came on Saturday, they all were the old error, improper typeset version. That has to fix itself sooner or later. But man, even, you know, I'm going to tell you again, this book is going to keep selling. It's going to sell tens of thousands of copies. We can tell just because even after the big surge went away, we're still selling between 30 and 50 copies a day. And most of it not to this audience. So if you have one with the arrows in it, you really do have a collector's edition of the book. But if you haven't picked one up yet, go ahead and pick it up. And I'm going to order one copy every week until it comes corrected, and then I can absolutely verify that it's corrected. It said it was, but Amazon is it's an art, not a science. Next up today, mentioning T-Spaz, and you always help us out when you shop there, the Meter Block Smart Meat Thermometer set, the four probe set, is on sale again today for about $160. This is one of the best cooking tools you will get your hands on. Four individual probes, they each go into your meat. You can run all of your temperatures on a free app you put on your phone. You can network it into your network, not just Bluetooth, and that means you can be across your property and you can still see what's going on with your cooks. You can set alarms. It is fantastic. It has one limitation, one true limitation. The probes are relatively thick. This is not for fast cooking that half-inch steak or pork chop. This is your roast, your turkey, your chicken, or your big, thick, like 1-1.25-inch steaks, chops, etc. And it works beautifully for that. The only reason I haven't pushed this more is it normally sells for about $260. And I personally think that's a bit expensive for it. In the $150, $160 range, it is totally worth the money. When I first got one, it was on sale. I was like, oh, that's a good price. I didn't even notice it was on sale. And so I don't push it that much. Whenever it goes on sale, I bring it around. If you've had this on your to-get list, this is a good time to do it. About $160 is the floor. It's about as cheap as it's ever been on Amazon. I use a tool to watch prices on all the products in my catalog. It's been a dollar less than it is today. That's the cheapest it's ever been. Anyway, with that, thanks for everybody for tuning in. I really appreciate it. We've got the week off to a great start. We also started the ChatGPT course this morning. If you're taking that, like I said this morning, keep working through it. If you want to take it, it's a 40-day course, so it's really almost 2.5 months because the weekend's being off. But when we're done, Tom and I will take a break. We're going to make some adjustments, and we will release it again. So if you want to take that course, it will be coming again in the future this fall. With that, take care. Thanks again to everybody who tuned in today. Thanks to everybody who supported my work and everybody that shared my work. Please share what we do. Pick an episode you like. Send it to a friend. Share one of the short videos. Anything you can do to help share this show helps us to reach more people. And I do believe that TSPC makes a difference in the world. There's a lot of podcasts out there. All they're looking for is attention, right? And you know what I could have done for attention today to get more than, 60 people in here at the peak in the live? I could have done a show on the new LA riots, and there could have been 500 people in here losing their freaking minds. And you know what it would do to make your life better? Not a fucking thing. I mean, we'll talk about riots here and there. There's a place where, hell, maybe we'll even do it tomorrow. But that is not what we're going to be. We're not just a podcast that's out there trying to get big names in for eyeballs, covering the most extreme examples of things for eyeballs, turning it into another political podcast or something like that. The type of thing we did today actually empowers people to feed themselves, feed their families, grow businesses, do shit that matters, that changes your life. We'll keep doing that. And the more you share what we do, the more people we can do it for. Thank you to all of you who've helped us over 17 years. We're actually 11 days away from the TSP birthday. June 20th, 2008 was when this show started. And that means that on the 20th of June will be 17 years at TSPC. Thank you to all. Jesse says, my daughter wants to read your T-shirt. Oil gone in 10 years in 1960, another ice age in 10 years in 1970, acid rain destroys the crops in 10 years in 1980, ozone layer gone in 10 years in 1990, ice caps gone in 10 years in 2000. Here we sit in 2025, and none of that shit happened. None of it happened. There's a different message on the back. Basically, all we've gotten for all that stuff is scared a bunch and a bunch of new taxes and less freedom. So that's the shirt. David Price says, I remember the Jetta. Thank you, sir. Anybody that's been around since Jetta days is truly old school TSPC. Again, thanks to everybody. I'll catch you tomorrow with a totally new episode.
just run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.